Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Create, sponsored by Gaper.io. Today we have Derek. Derek is the Chief Product Officer at Dashlane. Derek, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So Derek, a brief background about yourself, you know, what you've been doing prior to Dashlane, then we'll discuss Dashlane with you.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'll keep this high level. I've spent a lot of time at tech companies. I've always been in product roles. I started my career out at Microsoft, worked there for a number of years in a variety of different teams and organizations, a lot in mobile, actually, as we were trying to boot up our ultimately failed efforts to sort of compete in the mobile space. And then from there, I spent some time at Skype. Obviously, Microsoft was bringing Skype sort of into the fold around this time. And so it was great to sort of work on a product that had a massive amount of scale. I think we had about 400 million connected users at the time. And then really, you know, diving further as my career went along into startups and spending a lot of time at, Getty Images during some of its more formative years, and then Track Maven and now ultimately Dashlane. Really the common denominator in the last couple gigs being, you know, subscription software, consumer and business. Actually at Dashlane, that's sort of the primary advantage is we have both a consumer and a business offering together, and that allowed me to kind of pull together some of my experience through the years.
Got it. Awesome. So just kind of like keeping the conversation relevant towards, you know, today's time and all, you know, building an app that is being used by more than 10 million people globally. Feature rollouts, team management. What is it? What's the daily life of a chief product officer prior to COVID? Then discuss the life of a chief product officer during the COVID.
Well, prior to COVID, you know, we had a really interesting trajectory as a company. You know, Dashlane's about 10 years old. And we've scaled up to about 15 million users, primarily through the consumer channel. So building sort of a B2C focused business. And, you know, that has been a great ride. I've been at the company for about 3 years. But a lot of the work you want to do in the consumer space is very much focused on experimentation. You know, you're going to spend a lot of time trying to understand if you change this layout in the onboarding, or if you add this new feature or functionality, how does that ultimately change, you know, customer behavior in a way that benefits the business. You know, either you get more people to create accounts, you get more people to convert, you get more engagement with a feature that perhaps creates more retention long-term. So it's just a series of science experiments, and you really want to build your product team with that in mind, knowing that no one really has the answer. You want to think about outcomes, like we want to increase the number of users we have, we want to increase the conversion of those users, et cetera. And then you really try to build up a team that is comfortable with that ambiguity. So that was sort of the world we were in. I think we started to realize that the B2B channel is growing very, very quickly. You know, we're seeing in many ways a lot of growth on the business side. But it's ultimately for a company like Dashlane, a password manager, it's the same product at the end of the day. You still have to have an employee actually activate this thing, put passwords into it, autofill those passwords. So it's been a real interesting challenge to take, you know, sort of what we already were doing and now add sort of the layer of what the business needs, you know, more administration, more deployment, more provisioning, while not losing that sort of consumer DNA. So that's sort of, you know, that was the status quo, I guess, going into COVID.
Got it. So, last year, if you remember, March, April, May was kind of like a panic mode for everyone, right? Okay, whether we're going to get the job, where the world is heading towards, is it an apocalypse or something, right? Then May, June, July, August onwards is when everyone started feeling the Zoom fatigue, or the good terms like mental health, you know, those kind of things started coming. Did you face those challenges with your product team, and what kind of changes you adopted in the daily routines?
Sure. Yeah, I think the one thing we really had going for us is that we were already a distributed company. So we had initially started Dashlane in France, actually in Paris, And that's where our first offices were. And then we expanded to New York. And then most recently, in the last couple of years, we've expanded to Lisbon, Portugal. And so as a result, we already had Zoom rooms in every single conference room. We had a culture where, frankly, I think having a room with just in-person participants was the minority of the cases. Like, it was very, very rare. And so we were very good about already documenting things. You know, we used Confluence, which is the best sort of product you could hope for when you're completely separated from people, even if it has, you know, some user experience gripes. So we kept things really well documented, knowing again that no one was, you know, it was no guarantee that the person you were meeting with was going to be in the room. So there was good discipline there. There was good discipline around using Zoom. You know, we didn't have to like scurry to figure that out or to add that. People, you know, the equipment we were using, everybody already had good webcams and mics. It was already the case that some of our employees were working remotely here and there. So a lot of the infrastructure was already in place. So I think initially it was kind of a non-event. I think we were able to basically run the company exactly as we did before. It was really the longer term effects that I think started to create, you know, some fracturing in areas that we probably could have expected, but, you know, it took longer to see.
Gone. So now, you know, since you've mentioned from big corporations to working with startups, you know, as a chief product officer, you know, what advice would you give to young companies, you know, seed stage, series A, B stage, you know, and when they're building lovable products, you know, top three or four pieces of advice would you give to these technical founders or others?
Well, I mean, I think it sounds obvious, but the first thing is to really make sure you have product market fit. You know, one of the things that is a little bit obfuscated with the current venture capital environment is that you can sort of pump companies up on, you know, these artificial sugar highs, these steroids of, you know, you get lots of capital investment. And so it allows you to sort of grow the company inorganically, which makes a lot of sense because you want to scale up. But I think it obscures sometimes whether or not you actually have a product that people will love and will ultimately become retained. And I think that's, you know, the real difficulty is to see that signal from the noise. So I've been in some companies where, you know, we had really, really great traction on the new sales side, but our retention was terrible. And so we needed to look at, you know, what were the things that we were doing in the product itself to ensure that, you know, the right type of user was using us, especially in the B2B environment. In other words, this person, a very junior employee, or is this person actually a decision maker? You know, is this person actually the person that ultimately makes the decision on the renewal? And thus, do they see this as a product that is essential? And, you know, with that, how much of a real problem are you solving? Are you solving a nice to have problem or a need to have problem? And I think that also really factors in. And so, you know, sort of for new companies, I think you just want to really make sure that you're solving something that sort of is a need to have, and it's a need to have for somebody who actually has buying authority. And on the consumer side, obviously, it's a much simpler equation, but you want to make sure that you're solving a real problem that is happens frequently enough that people really feel like it's worth investing in a solution. You know, as an example, you know, there's plenty of companies right now that are like automating the mortgage experience. Like, you can go get a mortgage, you know, very easily by using technology. Well, that's great. That is indeed a frustration, but it's not very frequent. And how often do people need to go get a new mortgage? You know, every 10 years, 20 years, something like that. So I like the idea of solving things that are both frequent and frustrating.
Makes sense. So, you know, last question comes down to your own personal productivity. I'm pretty sure we could have talked for another 20 to 30 minutes, but due to marketing constraints, you know, we have to keep these podcasts within 8 to 12 minutes. So my last question is around your own personal daily productivity hacks that help you go by the day, especially during the pandemic, living in New York, those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first and foremost, you have to have a good setup, especially if you're working remotely. So I have I have a 32-inch 4K monitor, which is the same that I had in the office. I use that alongside my laptop, so I have dual screens. I make sure to have a high-quality webcam that's actually on the bigger screen, so that it's not, you know, sort of getting me from below. You know, it allows me to really look at both the people on the screen and for them to sort of feel like they're seeing me straight on. It just, I think, reduces the amount of exhaustion that people feel. In terms of like staying on top of, you know, motivation and things like that, I'm a very big believer in like the one thing, which is, you know, at the beginning of the day, you need to think about what is the one thing that you would do. If you could check it off your task list, everything else becomes easier. So, you know, the classic example would be like, if you're really, really working so many hours because you need to hire people on your team, well, the one thing you should do is hire people, because eventually all the other stuff is going to get easier and it's going to ultimately free you up. So I like, you know, I subscribe to that belief, and I think it's really, really important to always every day think about what is that one thing that you actually want to check off to be able to get done. And then I, you know, manage that with the typical stuff. I use Microsoft To Do to manage my task list. It has a really nice function where you can actually have, you know, your long list of tasks, and then you can kind of segment that off into my day, which just allows you to create tasks just for the day. So you can start to slice those things up a little bit more. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, obviously, you know, just making sure that I have the right checkpoints, you know, making sure if I need to move a project along, I make sure that I have a meeting scheduled, you know, at some point, in an incremental manner. So, you know, in a week from now, I'm checking in with, and it helps me actually stay accountable to myself and to those on my team and to those that I work with.
Got it. Derek, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for everything. Take care of yourself and stay safe.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.